and welcome to episode 27 of the Match of the Week podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network in partnership with Place to Be Nation. My name's Tim, and with me is Tanner. Tanner, how art thou?
I'm doing good. Still recovering from just all this Pokemon news.
I know.
Detective Pikachu.
Video games and you, last couple of weeks, very busy, very interesting
amount. Well, I've been playing a lot of Red Dead. We can talk about that.
No, I'm still trying to finish Dragon Quest. I'm 110 hours in the freaking Dragon Quest. I don't even want. Here's the thing. Here's how I'm never going to touch Red Dead Redemption 2. If I'm spending 110 hours playing Dragon Quest, I'm screwed if I ever play Red Dead Redemption. Like, Jesus. I will spend an entire month's worth of hours in that game. Like, it would not be good. So,
I'm 30 hours in. As of this recording, I'm on chapter 4.
Cool.
Yeah,
but I've heard nothing but good things.
Great game. Definitely pick it up. I'm sure Rockstar needed me to tell you to go pick it up,
correct,
considering they've, you know, biggest entertainment opening of all time and has shipped 17 million copies. But
right, they're going to make like $1 billion within the first couple months.
$1 billion. They're going to have to create a new number for sure.
They might in Rockstar dollars. So
yeah.
All right, so that ends our video game minute. We hope you enjoyed that. Now let's talk about
the show.
That being said, okay, Tanner, let's just put this out there. The match we're talking about today, I think it was almost no surprise if you heard me slip that the last week episode we did, Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns, I mistakenly said it was in Minneapolis. It was in Memphis. Got the two mixed up. That's because this match is in Minneapolis, and it's, for my money, I think it's the best match of the decade for WWE, and it is the Shield versus the Wyatt family from Elimination Chamber 2014. Tanner, I think like the setup for this match is it's well documented. I mean, this match, especially for our corner of wrestling Twitter, this is a match that really needs no introduction, and I feel like we can just really get into the meat and, you know, of the match right away. So, just off the top of your head, big picture, like, does this land at the top of your list so far for the decade for WWE?
Definitely in WWE, just in terms of this is one of the rare examples where everything about the build to it was perfect.
Right.
Like, it was a... I mean, literally could not have wrote it any better. And the fact that, you know, there was never any interaction between the two teams, and, like, you have these two six-man or two, you know, trios built, you know, kind of rising in power at around the same time, you know, the Wyatt family obviously having the big NXT run, and the Shield, you know, never really got there. They never really worked in it. They worked NXT a few times as the Shield, but they were mainly a main roster act. So Right. Them getting to collide was always sort of like fantasy booking. Like, I know a ton of people were fantasy booking it for, you know, multiple WrestleManias. And then the fact that they kind of just dropped it in the middle of the road of WrestleMania, maybe in hindsight it's kind of a blunder just the way the match went, because imagine putting this at Mania. I mean, would have blew the roof off the place. So no, it's like I can't think of a better example. It's definitely the best Wyatt family match ever, period. I would say it's either the best or the second best Shield match off the top of my head.
Sure.
Obviously, the best Shield match would be versus Los Matadores and Rey Mysterio off a main event a couple of weeks before. This is a great example of like six. I don't want to say up and comers, because obviously Luke Harper, Brody Lee had been around forever and a day at this point. You know,
same with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, and so, you know, Kane, Tyler Black and John Moxley. You know, they've all been around for a while. But in the WWE canon, these six up and comers getting to just do what they do best for 20-25 minutes, with really no restrictions, it's just was awesome to see. And like, I still can't believe they actually managed to book the match right. As weird as that sounds. Yeah. So I could not imagine if an injury or just a booking something would have taken this match off the table, because I can't imagine a world where this match doesn't happen, just because right. it would have been so bizarre for these. I mean, it's happened a couple of more times, you know, since with, you know, different trio groups in WWE. It would have just seemed weird for these two up and coming trios to not have ever wrestled. Like, that would have been a weird footnote in the history of the WWE. It was like, yeah, they were just, they never met and interacted at all. Like, that would have been bizarre.
Yeah, so this was, if you think about it, the Wyatts had been around for about a year on the main roster, but they had been, it's really interesting that they kept them apart for that year, you know, until they got to this point, because as you're saying, like, you either had, you know, the six mans with the Wyatt family, or Harper and Rowan as a tag team while Bray, you know, sat in his rocking chair and looked weird. But the Shield on the other side, they had been the workhorses for a year at that point after debuting at Survivor Series in 2012. And then, of course, the TLC match with Ryback, Kane, and Daniel Bryan that started off just this incredible, incredible run.
An all-time great trios run.
No, this is where they become an all-time act.
Yeah,
because they understood what it took, and I mean, they'll tell it in kayfabe terms, but they're also talking kind of real talk in a lot of ways. It's like they understood probably 6 months in that Roman was probably quote unquote the guy, that he was going to be the person out of this that was going to come out looking the best. But then you had a guy like Rollins, who had already in NXT shown that he was somebody that was going to be pegged for greatness, winning the title, having his kind of brush up about wanting to be up on the main roster already, and then eventually being teamed up with the Shield. Of course, the story was, you know, CM Punk said that Chris Hero should be a part of the Shield, and we love Chris Hero. We love him so much, so much, so much, so much. But I don't know how even Chris Hero would have worked with this. I don't care who you take out and plug in with Hero. I don't know if it works nearly as well, to be perfectly honest with you. And the fact that they had both teams had a year to show, you know, exactly who they were. This was one of the best. I think this is what WWE, when they're at their best from a booking / storytelling standpoint, is when they can keep certain people away from each other, and but also book them in ways that maybe they don't know especially when down the road that they're going to meet. They just know they're going to. They know at some point those two people or those two teams are going to interact. And then when they do, they know how to make it special. They know how to really make it seem like a big deal. They do that more often than not. And the setup for this match was really basic. You know, Ambrose being kind of the guy who's a little bit off, and maybe after a year being together, and Roman after his Royal Rumble performance showing he's probably the guy here, while Seth being Seth is like, maybe I'm the guy. Dean is the only one with a title. And so you have this really interesting trio that goes up against this guy who loves to play mind games and Bray Wyatt, and he knows how to exploit that. And that sets up this match. That sets up the start of this match, which is tremendous. One of the best starts to a match ever, where they just go after each other for 2 minutes in a wild brawl before they finally ring the bell and start the match. But I just really love the build for this match. I really love how that paid off to start the match, which you really don't see nowadays as often. And it really makes the way that this turns out to be on that foundation already. That's what allows it to become a special match.
Oh, yeah. And the great thing about this match is it's – I don't like using the term, even though I use it all the time, so why not? It's very layered, because obviously you have the story of who's the best trio, but you also have like six individual arcs in this match of everybody trying to tell their piece, like, you know, of, you know, Roman wanting to be the best, and, you know, Seth just being this crazy, you know, like willing to do anything for his team, Dean, you know, also kind of in that same boat. And then you have the Wyatts, you know, doing their thing separately. And it really builds off the fact that really any six of these guys could have broke off from this and been, you know, top tier talent. Obviously we have, you know, injuries and stuff and maybe some miswritten storylines to blame for not all of them holding world titles at this point. But, like, looking at this in hindsight, like, yeah, you can look at the Shield in this match. I mean, they just carried themselves like superstars, really. Yeah. Like, even, like, the Wyatts had a great presence. And obviously, you know, the whole, you know, all the Fireflies thing, you know, great, great piece of business. But the Shield really carried themselves as, like, there was never the, like, the effect of, oh, obviously this guy is going to be way bigger than the other two and just leave the other two in the dust and the other two are going to be, you know, mid-carders or even lower-card guys for the rest of their career. Like, all three of these guys became main event acts, or are main event acts. And it's cool to see that, because that just doesn't happen. Like, you very rarely go from making a trio into three successful top acts. I mean, just look at the numbers they draw at house, you know, house shows, or, you know, just their catalog of great matches. Even I think people kind of typically think of Dean as like the weird guy of the group, just because he doesn't have the catalog of great matches. But if you go, you know, watch some of Dean's stuff before he got hurt, that dude was wrestling like 320 matches per year, and like working his, I mean, he was working more than Seth or Roman in a year. And even though he wasn't working these high, you know, top tier, he had a great run with the US title. You know, he had a great, you know, just a bunch of fun stuff in his career. So I think this match really helps set that up, especially in a historical context of, this is, like you said, this is where like the Shield's all-timer status gets cemented into history.
Yeah, and the match itself, it really allows to, you know, the build off the six-man concept. You get two essential hot tags in this match. You kind of get everybody pairing off. It's really built, if you want to go back to it, you wonder how much Johnny Ace built this damn match, because this is very much like your All Japan six-mans in the early part of the 1990s, the way this is layered out, you know? Everybody pairs off. You really do get to see, you know, Dean and you obviously get from the start, you get, you know, Dean and Bray is the biggest pairing. That's going to be where this comes off. You saw it in the pre-match. He's the guy who get jumped from behind by Dean, you know, and then when they start pairing off, it's Dean and Bray really just, they have this wild energy between them. And then you have things like the Roman and Eric Rowan. I really love Eric Rowan in this match. I think him pairing off with Roman was a great thing. Roman, of course, you know, pairing up with Luke Harper, I think was obviously big here, because Luke was just as athletic in a way as Roman is, and they were able to really play it off in ways that allowed him to show that off in a couple of different manners, which was really neat, while also still getting his presence as this brooding big dude also there. But I think one of the biggest things that I took away from this match was that this was Bray Wyatt's best performance that I've ever seen from him. There's nothing I think he's ever done. The only ever time I think he was this close was actually the month before, when he faced Daniel Bryan at Royal Rumble. And also whenever he faced off against Rey Mysterio in six mans, like back a couple months before then, there were some Rey Mysterio teams that were against the Wyatt family. And there were some incredible interactions just between the two of them. But this is like, you knew that Bray was really kind of savoring this moment. This was kind of his way to show that he was just as good, if not in his mind, better than the three guys across from him. And he wanted to show that in this match, both in storyline and probably behind the scenes as well. And he really put so much into everything in this match. He really, like I said, the interactions he has with each of the different three guys, that he really does different things with them. He knows that his equal across from him is Roman. He knows that he's going to have to, you know, be a little bit more cagey to try and get away from Rollins because of Rollins' athleticism and his ability, his risk-taking nature. And then with a guy like Ambrose, he knows he's already in his head. He just has to wait for him to do something stupid, and then he's able to take advantage. And he knows how to do that within the context of the match. And you see that change with him with each time he's in the ring with that guy. And like, that's something that's really, I think, difficult for a lot of fans to pick up. You really have to watch it. It's something that really doesn't come off unless you're watching closely to see what the interactions are like. And I think he's brilliant in this match at making not only those things happen, but also playing the ringleader for Rowan and Harper on the other side. He is just absolutely in his element in this.
Yeah, match. Like, I think, I mean, watching this match, like, Bray comes off as a megastar in all of this, just with, I mean, like you said, he wrestles everybody, and obviously, you know, the Shield are three different people, but he wrestles like he's wrestling three different matches almost at the same time. And then again, being the ringleader of, you know, for Harper and Rowan, he's really on just a whole nother level in this match. Like, I don't think he's ever gotten close to this again in his career. I think it was teased a little bit a couple years later when actually Bray and Roman team up and they have that great little moment. It's like one of the, you know, most popular wrestling gifs of Bray just pointing at who, I don't even remember who it is, but, and Roman just coming out of frame.
That's right.
Spear.
Yeah.
Like,
he had just hit Sister Abigail and someone was coming for the save and he just points. And as soon as he points, Roman hits the spear. It's like one of the best produced things.
It's like probably completely accidental, but also like, holy shit, just what a great piece of character work. And like, that's the closest Bray has ever gotten to like anything like this since. And like, I don't know, like it really makes me appreciate Bray as a wrestler, especially in this match, you know, being as young as he was. Like, I don't even remember how old he was in this match or how old he is now, but I mean, he was in his 20s. Like, these are all young dudes in this match. Like, so, like, an obvious.
Yeah, he's 27 in this. He's 26 in this match, actually.
So, there's really not a quote unquote ring general to go off of. Obviously, you have guys like Harper and Rollins and Ambrose who have been around for a hot minute. But there's no, like, in a wrestling sense, no real veteran in the ring. So the fact that they kind of just, again, go balls to the wall for this, but it never comes across as spotty. And that's what was different about this match. It doesn't come across as spotty, but it's still, I mean, packed full of action. Like, there is never a dull moment in this match. And that's why you get to hear, or you hear a lot of people say this is the best, you know, this is the WWE match of the decade, or this is the best six-man tag in WWE history, or, you know, several match of the year awards this match won in 2014. And like that, you know, like, all, if it was just another spot fest, that would have been different, because all the Shield matches up to this point were in their own ways spotty. Like, I remember reading a comment or a tweet in 2013 where the Shield were like opening Raw in these 25-minute six-man tags every week, and they were like, oh man, it's like getting a PWG match on Raw. And I'm like, yeah, it is, but you know, that's not everybody's cup of tea, obviously. But this wasn't, the, like you said, this was built and structured very similar to a big old All Japan, you know, trios match from the 90s. Like, it's structured in that way. There is a defensive, like, it definitely feels like the teams kind of are on defense at some point, which you usually don't get in WWE matches at all. But it feels like instead of teams trying to win, at some points they're just like, okay, I'm trying to survive so we have a shot at winning. And it comes across like a well-structured, like, these six guys are, you know, six veterans. Like, even the weak, I mean, what most people would probably call the weak link of the match, Eric Rowan. Like, Eric Rowan was great in this match. Like, no.
Yeah. I don't think he was the weak link at all. Like, I think, like, if you're saying he's a weak link in this match, that's like saying Akira Taue was, like, the worst of the four pillars or what have you. He's still freaking Akira Taue.
Blasphemous. But
you're wrong. Blasphemous. You know, but yeah, I totally get what you're saying there. you know, the match itself, the layout is great. Like we talked about, the first part is essentially the feeling out process. Then Dean starts getting in trouble. He gets the hot tag to Seth. Seth does what a lot of people like. The if you think about the Shield matches, you know, Seth as the hot tag guy, he was the guy in the year leading up to this. He was the guy that was the catalyst towards the Shield figuring it out by the end. He comes in, he's the fresh guy. He just freaking out CrossFits everybody essentially. But this time he gets caught. And once he gets caught, then you're like, okay. So something changes here, right? Because you're not really used to this. You're used to Rollins coming in and just running wild, and then the chaos ensues, and somehow the Shield come out victorious because they know how to work within that chaos. But he gets caught here, and then that leads to a really great control segment. You get my favorite spot of the match, which is, you know, Harper knocks down Rollins, and then Ambrose tries to charge in, and he hits a giant boot from Harper and sells it in a way where he, like, bowling pin falls backwards, rolls out of the ring, and then, like, falls backwards against the barricade. Like, it's one of the greatest sell jobs I've ever seen. Like, just...
And
just
it doesn't come across as goofy as sometimes an Ambrose bump does. It comes across as, like, man, he just got his shit rocked. And,
correct. Yeah. And yeah, just insane. And from there, then the obvious thing is like, okay, now you got to get, you know, Reigns into the mix. And so him and Rowan, he's the guy he meets on the hot tag, and they just start going after it. And then that just devolves into the chaotic nature. And this is why the buildup and them not facing off against each other. This is why, like, we talked about preconceived notions about Bryan and Reigns last week. Like, what you think of as a fan when you're watching those two guys. When you're a fan watching these two teams, when things get chaotic, you're expecting the Shield to figure something out, and they end up, coming out victorious. And here, the opposite happens. Everybody gets paired off. Bray understands how to take advantage of everybody. He's the guy who is able to isolate Ambrose once they go into the crowd. He gets rid of him off screen. We never see what happens. We don't even get a camera guy following them to kind of see what happens. We just know that Dean gets taken out off screen. And then when he comes back and it's 3-2, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this ain't good. And then just the systematic destruction follows from there. Rollins gets caught and then gets put through the table, very much like what the Shield would do, right? That's an ominous showing to whatever had happened the Shield had done for the previous 15 months. They're the guys who are always putting folks through tables. And then Reigns, 3-on-1, he's great. He's their juggernaut. He's the guy who comes in and finishes folks off, really. Can he do it against the Wyatts? And the best part about it is they make you think he can. Yeah. He takes big shots. He gets the power out of Sister Abigail, which plays off some of the things he's powered out of previously in previous matches, especially with what he did at the Royal Rumble. And it looks like he almost has a shot. And then Harper takes the spear, which allows Wyatt to get in there, hit Sister Abigail, and steal the win. And it's just like, just the booking. Oh my God. Like, I just remember watching it live and just being like, it was just everything about it was pitch perfect. Like, literally every move, everything they did in that match, there was a purpose. There was something to it. It played with what you understood about both teams coming in. You really got an understanding of what the hierarchy was of both teams. And it was interesting to note, like, the Shield had been seen as this unit. But then as they got bigger and Roman had his showing at the Royal Rumble, and they started playing off of how they're great individuals, but were able to compile this unit together, it was the Wyatts just being the unit. It was them being the best team and them figuring out the best ways to isolate folks and win within the chaos. And it was this transference of power almost of what your expectations were. And when it finally happened and the Wyatts won, you're like, wow, like what the hell did I just see? Because nobody looked bad coming out of it. Nobody came off less than they were. All it was the Wyatts becoming equals with the Shield, and in some cases better in storyline terms. It's just, it's remarkable. Of course, the aftermath sucked. We can talk about that to close if you want, but I just come off from this match as just in awe of all the little things they did to make everything in this match matter the way it did, and how even 4 years later, when everybody has kind of gone off and done what they've done since then, as singles or tag competitors, however you want to see it, it's like, it's still just an amazing piece of business. Just incredible.
I mean, it really is rare to like go off and see like, huh, these guys have all had success after this match. Like, obviously, like we've said, there's a couple of guys in this match that had career performances here, but none of them ever really had really faded off too far. Again, I think at some point, all six of them have been out of action for extended amounts of time, which, you know, sucks. Like, Rowan has missed a ton of time. Bray, you know, Luke, Seth had the injury. Dean just came off an injury, and now, you know, Roman's gone. And it's a weird moment in time. Like I said at the beginning of the show, like, there wasn't much more of a window you could have ran this match. And it happened, and it has the implications. And I remember at the time, after watching this, I was like, oh my God, that's like one of the best matches I've ever seen live. You know, watching it as it aired, and, you know, we give it the whole 10 or 5 stars. It's not often where a match I watch live that I go, you know, I don't come off that high. Like, I watched it again last week, and I'm like, yeah, this match is still 5 stars. Still one of the best matches I've seen in WWE in, you know, this decade. Still one of the best 6-man tags I've seen this decade. Like, it holds up, which I think, especially in WWE, like, doesn't happen a lot with matches, because obviously with storyline stuff, contextual stuff, it can, you know, raise or lower your thoughts on the match. But like, this match is still just as perfect, you know, 4.5, nearly 5 years later at this point, than it was when it happened in, you know, February of 2014.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those matches where the extenuating circumstances kind of make it timeless too. This was really the best possible time. It was a lot like Reigns and Lesnar, where Lesnar hadn't kind of devalued himself yet in a lot of ways, and Reigns was, after the Bryan match, trying to show folks that he could actually go as a singles competitor. And I think that timing was great, even no matter what you think of the ending of that match. But this is another situation like that, where it's just like, you have established brands, young guys, they're going to have to meet at some point. And they do. And it's at the perfect timing for everything to come together. Yep. Now, afterwards, you know, they had a great match on Raw. There's some people who think that Raw match is actually better than this. I don't know really if that's good. The case. It's phenomenal. Seth Rollins is insane in that match. Yeah. But I do think that this was a feud that, if you really wanted to, you could really, really have made this something that could have lasted an entire year.
Oh.
And easily, you know? And it's kind of, it's a bit sad to think that this is this and the Raw match. And I think there was a third match too, that this was the best that they could do. But it really is kind of weird to think that, yeah, I understand they had things wanting to go, the Evolution, the Rollins turn, all that stuff down the line, because they need to become single stars. But it's like, I think you had time to really do something with these guys. And it's kind of odd to me that they didn't take advantage of the fact that you could really fill some pretty incredible amount of TV with them, and definitely get some pay-per-views off before this thing started losing its luster. And it is, it's kind of sad that those are, you know, it's very short that these two teams ended up going up against each other.
Yeah. Also kind of sucks that Bray's singles feuds with Ambrose and Reigns have both just sucked tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just been bad. Like, probably the best post-match feud that any of the combination of these two teams had was like the Harper Ambrose feud for the Intercontinental title, and even then kind of just like, it really, this was definitely a case of like, you needed all six people in this match to make this combination work. This wasn't just two guys making this match great. This was a byproduct of all six of them being on top of their game.
So I'm guessing that everybody who's listened to this has watched this match, and I do feel like obviously it's worth rewatching, because just thinking about the fact that this is it is almost like a moment in time, and there's a lot of those Shield matches end up being like that. It's amazing how we could do an entire podcast on the Shield and the run as a tag team and go through their match like bit by bit. In fact, I almost want to do that. If I had enough time to do it, I'd freaking do it.
Yeah. Someone sponsor us to do that.
Someone wants to pay us money to do that, we will drop everything and do that podcast.
Absolutely.
But this is a crown jewel. This is a true achievement in professional wrestling. It is one of the best things that the WWE has ever done, and it is worth every second of your time, the 30 minutes that this whole thing takes up. So Watch it, enjoy it, love it again. And just do it. You're not going to, it's one of the greatest things you'll ever see. And you can't go wrong. Elimination Chamber 2014, the Wyatts and the Shield finally get it on. And it's exactly what you would hope for and more. So you can go to ProWrestlingOnly.com and check out all our podcasts, all 27 of them right there under the podcast tab, along with the other great podcasts, the military industrial suplex, Lucha Afterground, all kinds of things over there. So check those all out on the website. Also go to the forums there to do some more deep diving into certain aspects and certain discussions at the Pro Wrestling Only board. And make sure you're subscribing to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation feed on your podcast app of choice or on SoundCloud, and you'll make sure to get this every week that it comes into your favorite podcast app. And also rate and review 5 stars. Let us know specifically it's us you love. And we will make sure.
Yeah. Tanner, the best host all time, match of the week, just the best podcast ever.
Correct.
Yeah. Let us know.
Ever. So, Tanner, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Tanner1495. Still fighting my battle, trying to get at Tanner.
Go get him.
Happen. Maybe it won't. And you, speaking of best podcasts of all time, you can follow the best non-wrestling podcast of all time, All You Can Hear, at AYCH Podcast. We are available on SoundCloud, on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Spotify, all your other RSS feed catchers. Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, you can find us there. You can follow us on Instagram, AYCH Podcast, and you can follow us on twitch.tv/AllYouCanHear.
You can follow me at Mr. Tim Livingston on Twitter and the Instagram. Also follow at PPW on Twitter and Instagram. And also on YouTube, we just had our 4th anniversary show the week before Thanksgiving. And it will soon be coming out on YouTube. So check that out. And you can also see the other great shows we've had in the last 4 years at the Phoenix Theater in the beautiful downtown Petaluma, California area. But to check those out, we'll be back again, hopefully next week. I think we're going to be able to do it more regularly going forward with more here on the Match of the Week podcast here on the Place to Be Nation Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. So thank you for joining us. We will see you next time.
Ciao.